Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Delphi, we are going to dive deep into it today. A lot of people already in the chat waiting. Welcome, everyone. Be sure to drop your comments in as we go through this. There's a lot to get through in this case. The latest, the Indiana Attorney General just told the appeals court that Richard Allen's conviction is solid. It was a fair trial. 130 years is exactly what he deserves. 94 pages saying everything was done right. But here's the thing about those 94 pages. They never once explain why the man who confessed to killing Abby Williams and Libby German said he shot them. They weren't shot. The silence is the starting point for this conversation. And we're going to break it down, going to break down the state's response, going to break down what the defense has been arguing and what happens next in this whole case. Joining us to do so, as always, my co-host, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, and our good friend, Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Welcome, gentlemen. Bob, let's start with you. You messaged me the other day, right when this dropped. This is the state's response to the submission by the defense of Richard Allen. Explain to all of us non-attorneys out there what this means and what your reaction is as we're going to kind of go through some of their responses to the points that the defense for Richard Allen has made.
Well, hello, boys. It's good to see you guys.
Bob.
Love it, man. I've decided we should call this segment DMB, not Dave Matthews Band, but Tariq Mata and Bruschi. So, you know, DMB. It's got a nice ring to it. So, yeah, I mean, first and foremost, just so people understand, so Allen's team filed their brief, and then you get the appellee's brief. And there is one more bite at the apple for the defense. So a reply will be forthcoming. It'll probably take another 60 to 90 days to get that. Mm-hmm. And then once that hits, it'll all go up to the judges and the panel will start reading through it, start going through the record, and then they'll start crafting their opinion. I just hope that they're not going to use AI to do it. it's a thing. I've been hearing.
I saw a headline on that today. Some ridiculous amount of like circuit judges are relying on AI for a lot of their decisions.
Yeah. It's a thing, man. It's a thing. And it does concern me. But to your question, which is really, you know, why didn't the AG's team kind of deal with this inconsistency of, you know, his confessions wherein he's clearly saying things that obviously didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And the reason they do that, because there's really no good answer. You know, I mean, a competent appellate team, when they're engaging with a fact that really does more damage by engaging in it than just ignoring it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's your kind of simple answer. I mean, if you address the wrong cause of death in the confessions, then you basically have two options, which are both awful. You know, one, you can argue the man can confess to a murder and get the manner of death completely wrong, right? And the confession is still reliable. And that's a losing argument on its face, really, because it undermines the very premise of the confession evidence itself.
Yeah.
And that it demonstrates insider knowledge. Or the second option is you try to minimize it and maybe argue as a slip of the tongue or confusion. But then the problem with that is that you conceded that the confessor was confused. And now you're one step away from the defense's argument being a winning argument, which is that these confessions were just the product of a deteriorating mind, you know?
100% they were. So, Bob, the thing that I just don't understand, because it just doesn't make any sense, and I know you probably can't make sense of it either, because this judge, this whole thing has just been so crazy stupid. So, and I'm probably got this wrong. You are so much closer and are so much closer to this case than me. But so a large part of this case was the round they said they found there that they said was Richard Allen's round. And they said it was from his gun, even though it wasn't fired. It was just an unspent round. And they said it matched his weapon. How's that even matter if they weren't killed by a firearm?
Yeah, I mean, their theory on the case has always been, which there's problems with this as well, but that bridge guy had a gun, pulled it on the girls up on the bridge, racked the gun, and that was his show of force in order to gain control over two athletic, you know, young teenage girls. And that, you know, as a former Fed, you're obviously familiar with weapons, and you know that the problem with that theory is that
– yes.
Cartridge would have popped out right there when he racked, you know, the round mm-hmm. was shot out. And, you know, where we're talking about this round being found is across a creek, you know, down a hill across a creek and up into Ron Logan's property, you know, and it's found in between the girls. So, I mean, that's a problem for them. So, but that's how they introduce the round as being relevant in this case, because they're saying that a handgun was used in order to control the girls to get them to their final resting place.
And how did they come up with that?
They say that in the audio, and they testified to this at court during the trial, that you can hear him rack the gun.
And there's no video of him racking the gun.
There's no witnesses.
No, they say they can hear it. They can hear it.
You can't hear really, exactly. So you can barely hear. There's a noise, which could have been really anything. That's racking a gun. Where's the gun? There's no gun in this. What are you talking about? Nobody's seen a gun. Oh, there's a gun. This reminds me. I mean, it reminds me of when I was a kid. I remember going and playing in the creek, and we would one day we found a carpet rolled up underneath the bridge that was near my parents' house. And we're, you know, 10, 12. And so our minds are going nuts. We think, oh, there's a body rolled up in this carpet. So we wander the creek and we find all this other random crap that people have thrown in. There's like old rusty telephones. There's all sorts of random shit in this creek in Wisconsin. And we as children put this all together in my treehouse, and we were solving the crime. Who killed the person that's rolled up in the carpet underneath the bridge? And the reasoning that we put the story together. Well, they use the telephone for this. They use this rope for that. Whole story. And it's all just, you know, figments of our imagination, but we're applying all these random things to this thing that doesn't even really exist. This is about as good as that.
Yeah.
I mean, massive confirmation bias, man.
Yes. It reminds me of just absurdity, but being taken with such a level of seriousness that only those who are coming up with it could possibly believe, but yeah, obviously enough have, side,
you know, which just, but we've all been through it. I mean, with this case, this is the most least likely individual on the face of the planet before you even get to the lack of stupid evidence.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite thing about that story is we get a peek behind the curtain to how the Tony Brusky that we all know and love now was born.
Oh, there's stories.
The Artie boys back there. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I ended up putting all those things in my treehouse and called it the Underwater Museum. Until eventually Underwater I grew up Museum. And then they took it down, and they're like, all this like artifacts from the creek are in there. Who knows? We might've actually had some evidence in there from real crimes. The state in their response describes Allen's solitary confinement conditions. And we've obviously been in an uproar about this for years now of where he's been. And they're really trying to play it up like he's at the Ritz. He's got a mattress. He's been offered a tablet. He showers three times a week. Apparently, there's a window at some point in here. They spent a lot of time talking about the creature comforts in here. What is spending that much time on ink, on the cell amenities, which there really aren't many? You wouldn't expect any either in the whole. But what does it tell you about where Indiana thinks it's most exposed that they're like, well, we offered him a tablet. We did this and he did that. And well, you know, what's your reaction to their, I guess, their framing of it in their response?
Yeah, if I'm the appellate lawyers for Allen, you know, my mindset is that when you spend that much ink on a particular issue, you know that in their mind, talking about the state, that it's their biggest vulnerability. You know, they're really trying to reframe the narrative before the court gets to the constitutional question. You know, so they're listing the amenities is a classic prosecution move. I mean, Tony, at trial, you know, they took great exception to the fact that he was in solitary. They just called it a single person cell. You know, I mean, like, that's the epitome of what we're talking about
here. Yeah.
Like the defense would say he's in solitary and the state would say he wasn't in solitary. He was in a single person cell. That's all. So, you know, I mean, look, if you're being intellectually honest about this, you can't argue that 13 months of solitary confinement for a pretrial detainee wasn't harsh, right? I mean, to me, them arguing that fact discredits them because any normal human being is going to be saying this guy was innocent at this point in time. He was innocent until proven guilty, and you've got him being trained like he's a war criminal. You know, and it's unbelievable to me.
Bob, how come no psych is out here screaming about the effects of solitary or single room confinement on an individual and what it does to them mentally? I mean, it's not just the research, but practical applications of this. When this case first broke and Tony and I were covering it and you were, you know, on the show too.
Yeah.
You know, I just got done reading all these expeditions to Antarctica and in the effects, even when you are with a small group of people, but in isolation, even with all the resources you have, your brain goes nuts. There's zero rational thought left because the way our brains work, we need social interaction in order to keep our cognitive functions. Otherwise, we start losing it.
Yeah.
And this is so clearly what was going on here, especially when the confession doesn't include in the first round any details that were actually accurate.
You know what? I mean, it's a great question. I mean, the defense called a couple of witnesses, Grassian, but he was really called not to get into the specifics of Richard Allen and his confessions, but kind of like broad generalizations of how false confessions are formed in our mind and how it kind of operates. And it's that concept which I found fascinating because I you know, when I was sitting in court watching the trial, because I had never really thought about this, but like when you are recalling a memory, you know, the first time that you do it, that becomes the next thing that you remember. So when you know, if you've told a story 20 times and you're going back on the 21st time, what you're recalling is the 20th time that you've remembered that particular memory. So you're not going back to the actual memory of it. So all the bastardization that will take place because our minds work in mysterious ways is what you're remembering on that 20th memory. So any kind of facts that you may, you know, and we have a tendency as human beings to do that. We want to fill in gaps, right? You know, I mean, if our initial memory of the thing was, you know, there were a couple of holes in what we remember, over time, psychologically, we start wanting to fill those holes in, and we do oftentimes. So I just found that was really fascinating, but that didn't really go to the issue of what you're talking about, which I have to say I was left wanting walking onto that trial in terms of exactly what you're talking about. Why wasn't there somebody on the stand just pounding the jury over the head with the concept that, look, we know from the doctors in the prison that he was psychotic. I mean, we had him involuntarily administering Haldol. That's the level of his psychosis at this point. So why wasn't there that witness there saying, okay, now that we know that was a fact, how do we address what was happening and what he was saying? How does that impact it? Because I think that the question that was never really answered, which I think is still hanging out there, well, okay, he's psychotic, but why does that automatically mean that he's not telling the truth? Which really goes back to Tony's first question. So, and that's where your answer lies, because you've got a guy that's saying both, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. One, he's giving general, which Robin, I think you would attest to, saying I did it is not a real confession. You know, you need facts. You need something to support the fact that you're saying something more than I did it, which is essentially what they had him saying. But then you've got those counter statements wherein he's giving absolutely incorrect facts, you know, like in terms of how the girls died, or that they were sexually molested, or that, you know, he had abused his own child,
yeah,
or that, you know, he had started World War III. He's clearly saying these things that aren't logical, that are clearly not true, you know. And as far as addressing, you know, the abuse of his daughter, you know, his daughter got on the stand and testified that's absolutely not true.
Right.
You know, so, but in terms of your question, I wish I had a better answer. I don't know. I think it was a missed opportunity by the defense in that, and I think it is something that had to be addressed.
And I got one follow-up to that too, Bob, and that is, as I don't know if how do you admit this or if you can put it in there as evidence, because it's so subjective, it's behavior-based. I know where that goes a lot of times in court. But if you actually – I did an analysis, and if you look at the overhears and the recordings between him and his wife, because I know you've seen them interact, you've been there when they're interacting, the amount of focus he has had on her and his family in every statement that he's made – comparatively to everyone else they've accused of similar crimes and actually have been convicted and actually did do the crime, it's night and day.
Yeah.
He is such a far outlier. Every single thing he says and does is about the impact of what he's being accused of, the impact on the family, the impact on the wife. Everyone else, that all self-centered narcissists that just want to abuse others, kill others, or whatever it is, it's all about the impact on me, all about me, 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 me.
Yeah,
he is completely flipped. That's why just behaviorally, the isolation or the one room luxury hotel, whatever it is, it is such a deviation from what people do.
Yeah.
And is that admittable? Can it be brought up, or is it just too subjective?
No, I mean, I think you could have called an expert. Whether or not Gull would have let that expert in is a different story. You know, I mean, that's the reality of the situation. I mean, the defense was really barred from putting in a lot of things that they felt were relevant and would be helpful. Because, like, the cue for the judges, is it helpful for the jury in terms of expert opinion? And I certainly think that would be. You know, but like she was of the mindset, I'm not going to let the defense put anything on that may shade away from the fact that I believe that he's guilty.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know,
it sounds exactly like her.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God she's gone.
Oh, man.
What struck me before we kind of move more into the defense of things, what struck me about this response from the state was the fact that they really are speaking out of their mouth from two different sides. Where when once, you know, one part they're talking about the gun and the confession of Richard Allen, where he says he shot them. And well, see, he admits to it, but they weren't shot.
Yeah.
But that other part, that's reliable. That's good. But that other part, it's okay. He was kind of nuts. So that we don't need to worry about that. But over here, this is okay. And then we go over to the van. And it's like, see, he had knowledge of the van, even though their timeline is all messed up, which that's a whole other part of the conversation of timestamps being wrong. And there's other videos for that if you want to take a deep dive into that, anybody, to explain all of it. But then they go to the van. See, he's reliable here because he claims he saw the van at X time. So this party's reliable. This party's not. That party kind of, it's like, either he is or he isn't. Like you can't just like pick the parts that are the best and then everything else that doesn't quite go with your narrative. Well, we're just going to omit those intellectually and by law and just kind of, you know, it's okay. We're right over here. That's the part that's insane to me. But this is how people work. I mean, they like to grab onto the things that confirm their own bias. Confirmation bias is what we have going on here, it seems. But it's to such an extreme where no matter what evidence is directly in front of them, it's really just stunning how they pretend it doesn't exist or that it doesn't have any sort of meaning.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's they want their cake and they want to eat their cake and have it too, or whatever the hell.
They want the whole aisle of cake, boxes.
It goes to what Robin said like earlier, man. It's confirmation bias, and if it doesn't fit their narrative, they're simply going to try to you know talk it away. And the reality is that's not how the system's supposed to work. You're not supposed to be trying to pound these square pegs into round holes or round pegs into square holes. But, you know, you see the state do it all the time, you know, and that's really when I talk to people about this case, you know, and I'm going to say this for all three of us. All three of us absolutely want justice for Abby and Libby. You know, the three of us are not sitting here rooting for a killer. The fact of the matter is that none of the three of us trust this conviction. And it's exactly for the reasons that you just pointed out, Tony. You know, if you have an intellectually honest case and you've got the evidence, well, go in there and prove it. You know, don't talk out of both sides of your mouth. Don't ignore facts that exist as if they don't. You know, because when you do that kind of stuff, that leaves me to one conclusion, and that's that this is a crap case and it should never have been brought. And then, you know, when you compound it with the fact that you have a judge that did everything in her power to disallow Richard Allen to have a fair trial, I have a problem with it, you know.
I feel the other confessions that came in, you know, that were, I think, a hell of a lot more credible because the life arc of those individuals actually did things like this, you know. Right. And so why not even consider that? Because reasonable doubt? Oh, shit. This thing is full of nothing but reasonable doubt.
When you're dealing with a bunch of people who are not reasonable in any way, shape, or form, that's really where a lot of this seemed to have been. Your thoughts in the comment section on this part on Substack and YouTube. Be sure to jump in. Give us your thoughts. Give us your opinions. We read them. We'd love to see them.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.